This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
Today we'll discuss National Nurses Week with AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, 8th District National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. All of you, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Jason.
Good morning.
So this week starts National Nurses Week. J. David, tell us about the week.
It's always an exciting week for me. It's the week set aside out of the 52 weeks of the year that we honor and recognize nurses nationwide. And VA nurses are represented by AFG, as well as Bureau of Prison and Department of Defense and a few other federal agencies that we represent have nurse membership in them. And we're excited. We always look forward to it. And while the week thinks a lot about registered nurses, it's a week that we also recognize not only the registered nurses, but the licensed practical nurses, the nursing assistants, and all those people who perform nursing services for patients nationwide.
And as someone who practiced as a nurse in the VA for years, what does this mean to you personally?
It means a lot to me personally. I chose to be a nurse. I ended up being a union official along life's way, but I chose to be a nurse. That was my chosen profession. And I think people go into nursing because they want to care for other people. They want to practice nursing. And it's not just giving pills or taking temperatures. It's assessing people, dealing with their emotional status, their psychological status, as well as health education of folks and the prevention of disease and trying to help all of us have healthy lifestyles.
MVP Nygaard, you're joining us from your district office in Minnesota. As a nurse yourself as well, talk about what the significance of the week means to you.
Well, I think that, you know, nurses work hard all year long, and they don't always get the respect they deserve from management or what the agencies. But I think this is one week that nurses nationwide, whether you're a registered nurse, an LPN, a nurse, an assistant, or whatever, that you all stand together, and we feel that we get the respect and you know, from management, that they have events all across the country at the different agencies, usually for the nurses. So it's a time that they're recognized for what they do.
And what does AFGE have planned this week to recognize these hardworking nurses?
Well, we have an ad going in Federal Times. We have the government standard, which talks about nurses and is interviewing some of our nurses. We're going to have a banner and have action alerts so our nurses can get on to AFG's website and be recognized right off the bat. There will be a banner that states, you know, AFG's recognizing nurses, and then an action alert so that we can hopefully have people click on it and send a notice to their Congress people regarding the bills that we're trying to push.
And J. David and Jane, as national leaders of AFGE, who represents thousands and thousands of nurses, and as you mentioned, in the Bureau of Prisons, the Department of Defense, the Veterans Administration, and other agencies, what are you hearing from the membership this week?
We've been hearing a lot of things. I see a lot of activity on Facebook, as well as just general email activity and conversations with folks about having events. I know in the VAs nationwide, many of the Veteran Service Organization auxiliaries always do some type of event recognizing all the nursing employees, and as well as most of the Veteran Service Organizations do something to recognize nurses. But it's a good week. A week that I think that is rightfully set aside for nursing people nationwide.
And Jane, what are you hearing out in Minnesota?
Well, I know that the VAs all have events. They actually have a work group that they put together yearly, and they usually either serve lunch for the nurses, and they usually give some type of a little present, whether it be a pen, you know, that they can write with, which is always a big thing for nurses. But they usually have an event. It's usually a week-long event. And they recognize nurses in different areas, whether you're a nurse anesthetist or a nurse practitioner, or whether you're an LPN registered nurse, OR nurse, whatever your specialty is, they recognize all the different nurses. I know that the VAs also have a recognition of, like, the top nurse in the different fields, whether you're a nurse practitioner, registered nurse, LPN, or nursing assistant. And that nurse is actually put in by their peers, which is very important to the nurse. And then they usually get a bonus, too.
When you talk to nurses around the country, is it that small recognition, that pen, that small gratitude of thanks that goes a long way with them?
I think it's huge for the nurses. I mean, we know that nurses are one of the most respected fields or professions in the nation. I mean, most people respect nurses more than any other profession. But it really is a time when they're really recognized, and it's very important to them. I mean, it's pretty minor when you think of it, that it's just a week that says that, you know, it's an AFG Nurse Recognition Week or it's Nurses National Nurses Week. But to nurses, it's a huge issue.
And talk a little bit about how nurses work in a very strong partnership with the doctors at these agencies.
Well, the nurses basically are the backbone for the agencies, whether it be the BOP, Department of Defense, or the VA. I mean, the doctors actually rely heavily on the nurses because the nurses are there 24/7. They're the ones that are monitoring the patients, assessing the patients, you know, hourly. And so they are the backbone. They are the ones who have a very good relationship with the doctors usually, and they listen to them because they, like I said, they're there 24/7, and they're the ones who are really caring for the patient.
NST Cox, is this what you found whenever you were serving in the Veterans Administration?
Oh, definitely. Particularly in the off-tour hours, the evening and night hours, there would be one physician for the entire medical center, but you would have many nurses, 40, 50, or 100 nurses strung throughout the facility, depending upon the size. And again, the physicians and nurses have great relationships. They are both unique practices. They're licensed in different fields, but yet they're about caring for the veteran or caring for the patient. There's the skills that each practitioner brings to the process. So nurses do a great deal. As Jane said, they're right there with them. They're monitoring them. They see those subtle changes to very rapid changes. If there is a code or something like that, a cardiac arrest, nurses are the ones that respond, defibrillate patients, maintain all the processes. Usually the physicians show up and say, well, you did a great job. You brought this one back around. So it's always nurses that are on the front line.
And I imagine that nurses probably have a strong connection to their patients as well. My thought is that nurses are probably very connected to their work. It's very serious to them. It's very emotional. And they probably get attached to people that they care for. Is that true?
Oh, that's clearly true. I still remember some of the very first patients I had in my career, and that started back in the early 70s, and particularly in the VA, because many of our veterans would be our patients for a long time, over many, many years, and you would see those folks, and some of them we sort of have grown old together and experience the aging process that we go through. And, yeah, there is a strong attachment. And also when you see people that are reaching the end of life stages, nursing is also not just about healing the sick, but death is inevitable for each one of us, and helping people obtain a dignified death is a very, very important thing in this world, and to make sure that those people are comfortable and properly cared for in the last days or hours of their lives is very, very important to nurses.
Now, this is obviously a very challenging profession. It's difficult. There's a lot of training that goes into becoming a nurse. But nurses are also facing some challenges beyond their control outside of the workplace, and some of that is related to collective bargaining rights. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
In the VA, registered nurses and other Title 38 professional employees, the physicians, physician assistants, do not have full collective bargaining rights in the VA. There are areas that are restricted, and we believe the VA has overly utilized these areas through the years to avoid engaging in productive collective bargaining. AFG has long had a stance. We agree negotiating patient care and those type things, they're not appropriate for collective bargaining or care modalities. We've never been interested in that. But the issue of negotiating compressed work shifts and things of that nature, those are not patient care issues. Those are community standards through every healthcare facility throughout the country. And for the VA to run away from exercising and bargaining with the union over those issues is not right, not right at all.
And MVP Nygaard, what's your take on this?
On the collective bargaining, well, I think that, you know, there was a time under the Clinton administration where we were allowed to negotiate a little bit staffing ratios and things like that, and we did take advantage of that in Minneapolis. And I think it clearly made the quality of care for the veterans better when you could negotiate a 3-to-1 staffing ratio in a step-down unit or ensure that there was 2-to-1 in ICU. So, you know, the goal of the federal unions and the federal nurses is to make sure that the patients are taken care of properly. And if it means collective bargaining rights and to push the envelope as far as we can, we're certainly going to do that. But yeah, to undermine us and not allow us to state what we need or what we need to do our job, does impact the quality of care to our veterans and our soldiers.
Also with us today here is AFGE Legislative Representative Marilyn Park, who's done a lot of work on Capitol Hill representing nurses and all of these agencies. Marilyn, could you take a minute to give us some examples as to who is impacted by these lack of collective bargaining rights?
Well, certainly the nurses we represent who are on the floor and in the clinics working very long hours, unlike their counterparts who work in a military facility with active duty or caring for federal prisoners in BOP, there is this unanticipated loophole in the law that affects only the nurses at the VA because they're in a different personnel system, Title 38, as you heard from Minister Cox, that the most basic workplace issues for a nurse are when they work, where they work, whether they're working within their scope, and whether they have the adequate training. In the VA, there is really abuse of this law, as was said, and therefore whether you are asked to work mandatory overtime on a prolonged basis rather than adequately staffing and scheduling, whether you are asked to be whether you are required to be detailed, let's say you typically work in long-term care and then they tell you you have to go work in ICU even though you haven't been trained for that, you have no recourse. If you work, if you're a weekend or evening nurse and then you don't get the extra pay that every nurse, whatever hospital you work in, earns when you work overtime or evening and weekend shifts, you have no recourse there. So whether it's about the safety of the care and the quality of the care, as MVP Nygaard said, or it's about just a schedule and an assignment that allows you to do your best, because our nurses take great pride in doing the best they can for veterans. And the law needs to be changed because the VA could, within the law, change its policies to allow us to start bargaining again over these basic workplace issues. But because they won't, we must change the law. That's what I'm working on.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue with AFGE's National Secretary Treasurer, J. David Cox, National Vice President, Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park about National Nurses Week.
Attention AFGE members, government and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park, talking about National Nurses Week. Before the break, we were talking about collective bargaining rights for VA nurses. How does this lack of collective bargaining rights really impact patient care?
It impacts patient care, Jason, by the fact that there is no way, as Marilyn referred earlier, for employees to seek relief if the VA does not live by its own regulations. The VA, there's premium pay for working on Saturday and Sundays or working for nights, evenings, those type things. If the VA chooses to not pay a nurse properly, then the nurse has no recourse of how to say, you didn't pay me properly, I want to seek relief. There's nothing wrong with filing grievances. That's just a way of resolving problems and workplace disputes. With all other employees, with Bureau of Prison Nurses, Department of Defense nurses, if they are not paid properly, they can file a grievance, seek relief. If they agree they weren't paid properly, they go and they back pay them and pay them properly. And the VA will acknowledge and say, oh yes, we agree, Nurse Nygaard, that you were not paid properly. However, the law says we don't have to pay you, even though we agree that you weren't paid properly. Well, let's be real about that. Every employee I know wants to be paid properly. That affects patient care in the fact that it affects morale. It affects working conditions. If people are volunteering to work overtime or to change shifts to make coverage, those type things, it doesn't make people readily available or very eager to do those type things. So there's a definite impact, and yeah, it affects patient care.
MVP Nygaard, I'd like to get your thoughts on the morale piece. How does all of this impact a nurse's morale and his or her ability to do their job?
Well, it's kind of interesting because if you're a registered nurse, you're working next to an LPN, and they can negotiate something that you can't. So in many instances, what we did in Minneapolis in the past was, and currently, is that if there's an issue that affects both LPNs and registered nurses, you would have to put in a demand to bargain and negotiate the LPN side of it and hope you can kind of sneak something in for the registered nurse. So it is a morale issue because you don't understand why one person that you're working hand-in-hand with, your peer, on a different level, that they have more rights than you have. And there's never been anyone within the VA who can honestly say that collective bargaining rights impact negatively patient care. We know just the opposite. We find that when we review policies, and we do that pre-decisionally, that most of the time the nurses that are at the bedside know that the policies are either incorrect and can give the correct information. It's the same as true whether it be for collective bargaining. When sometimes the management wants to just automatically implement something, they maybe forget a step that the nurses or the doctors would know that is correct and would be better for patient care. So I think the fact that they don't allow full collective bargaining rights really negatively impacts patient care because you're not getting the true message to managers.
And how does management respond whenever you bring up the point that some registered nurses aren't able to negotiate over the same things that an LPN is allowed to negotiate over?
Well, at the level of the agency, you know, I mean the facility, like if it would be Minneapolis or Des Moines or whatever, most of the managers in those areas wouldn't come back with any take on that because they don't have any say in it. Depending upon what type of management is, I mean, maybe they would allow you some input, but it's not the same. It's not standard nationwide. So the bottom line is that messages coming from Department of Veterans Affairs in Washington, D.C., they are the ones, and they are the bureaucrats that are trying to stop this. The people at the agencies have no input into it.
What is AFGE doing to change this, to secure collective bargaining rights for everyone in the VA?
Well, what we're trying to do is do it slowly. We continue to introduce legislation for full collective bargaining rights, but now what we're doing is we have two bills, H.R. 807 and S572, which basically would allow us collective bargaining rights on issues that affect pay. Because under this law, there's three different issues, but anyhow, issues that would affect pay, so it would allow us to grieve it if we didn't get true overtime for this or if they didn't pay us properly.
And Marilyn, how do those House and Senate bills look today? Where do they stand?
Well, we're very pleased. This is the third Congress that these bills have been reintroduced. On the Senate side, we have almost every Democrat who's a member of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee on the bill, with the main mover of the bill, Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio. And on the House side, the ranking member, Bob Filner, for the 3rd Congress, has introduced it, and he's also asked his colleagues to join on the bill, and they've just come back from recess, so I expect to see a number of our past supporters of the bill back on the bill this year. And I think this is a year when our friends in Congress are saying we will speak up on collective bargaining more than ever we need to.
Jason, I agree with Marilyn. In the Senate last year, we were able to get the legislation voted out of committee and get it moving. We all are aware that at the end of the season with the last Congress, there was a lot of legislation that didn't move forward, such as the VA legislation, which affected a lot of things. We believe that this bill would have been passed out of the Senate if the Senate had moved forward with the legislation. We believe that it will move forward in the Senate again this year. There seems to be very, very strong support. The House is going to be a different story. But this is a bill to correct wrongs. It is solely about VA following its own regulations and paying people properly, those type things, and that if they don't, that they go back and correct it. That's what works in every workplace that I've ever been involved with, where it be the federal government or be the private sector. If you didn't pay somebody properly, you say we made a mistake, you go back and correct it. The VA currently says, we made a mistake, but by the way, we don't have to go back and correct it, and we're not going to go back. We had discussions with the VA. They have tried to assure us that they are willing to live with their own regulations, and AFG had in-depth conversations with many of the department-level officials, including the secretary, who agreed that they should live with their own regulations. But whenever it came time to sign the document, the VA backed off and would not agree to sign the document of the things that they had agreed to. So it sort of continues to be up in the air. We will move forward. We're very excited about Chairman Patty Murray with the VA committee in the Senate. We believe she's a very aggressive chairman, that this legislation will move this year, and we do believe it will be passed by the Senate.
Did you get any sort of indication from the VA as to why they did not sign that to live by their own regulations?
I believe that there are appointees, or I will say, no, excuse me, not appointees, careerists in the VA who got those jobs under the previous administration, who have burrowed in, and they want to continue previous administration policies and not move forward with new policies of the Obama administration. And that seems to be our biggest roadblock in moving forward. That's why we are going to the Senate for relief and believe we'll get it.
So looking to legislation to fix this problem, really?
Correct.
Then.
Correct.
Another challenge within the VA really is the staffing issues. We have talked a little bit about mandatory overtime and not enough bodies really to go around. Talk about the scene inside the VA with the staffing levels as to where they are now.
Well, I can tell you that one of the biggest issues with the staffing levels right now is the FTE ceiling that has been mandated to the agency. So what's happening is that what the agency is actually doing is bringing in contract nurses to fill in. So we know that contract nurses don't deliver the same quality care as our VA employees, so therefore the patients are being impacted. You know, there's a lot of issues with staffing, the fact that the VA doesn't follow their own policies, the fact that we have to live year by year by budget, and our budget goes up and down all the time, you know, by the fact that we have these ceilings now, these FTE ceilings. And according to the VA, Congress doesn't understand money. They only understand ceilings. So what we need to do is try to have the Congress understand that putting ceilings on an agency for FTEs is a huge impact on patient care, whether it be DOD, BOP, or the VA.
NST Cox, could you explain this, please? If there are FTE ceilings, yet the VA understands that it's understaffed. There seems to be a disconnect there.
It's a total disconnect, Jason. It's like saying, okay, we give you 100 people to do this job. However, we know that it will take 150 people to do the job, but you have to figure out. And the government will impose the FTEE, full-time equivalents, ceiling. However, then the agency goes out and hires contract people instead of hiring their own people, which is a more expensive way to get labor and also have employees. As MVP Nygaard said, they're not accustomed to the facility. They don't know the patients and the regulations, those type things. And care of a veteran is a very unique care. So I think that it creates a substandard care. However, with any contracting things, there are big political paybacks. There are companies that do staffing for VAs and other healthcare facilities nationwide, that it's a big political payoff. So frequently it's not about an expense of the government. It's about how the government spends the money, whether they hire full-time employees to do the work, or do they give the money to a contractor that siphons off 90 cents of every dollar that's given to them for corporate greed, and then a little bit to provide services for the American people?
Shouldn't this just be about patient care and what's best for the veteran patient?
It clearly should be. And the care of a veteran is a very unique care. I mean, where do you get prisoners of war except those people who have served in the United States military? Where do you have most of the post-traumatic stress syndromes? I mean, I can't imagine anyone serving in a war, be it Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, anywhere, that experiencing that they wouldn't have PTSD. The VA is a leader in those type things. And not only that, there's many, many other injuries and the traumatic brain injuries, all these type things that we're seeing with today's veteran population that is very, very unique to the VA, and it's a unique care.
And I believe that we heard in some news reports recently with the killing of Osama bin Laden that that event could spark some memories, some PTSD, some traumatic brain injury in people who have already served.
Oh, there's no question about that. And I mean, when you – last night I listened to the news about the training of the Navy SEALs and the people that go through that, and it said like a – for every class of 200, only about 20 of them would complete the class, and that they were very, very specialized with the training and very unique with how they did that. And that's the way the VA is. Again, it is a very, very specialized care that you do for veterans. And when, you know, I see those men and women who go through that, there is no question someone going in to capture bin Laden or to, you know, to what was his final death there, there is injuries to those people. There is not a guarantee that they won't be shot, blown up, receive injuries. I mean, you have to think about that. And also, there's the psychological part of that. That's a very, very stressful life to live, and it's not what we normally deal with in our day-to-day mannerisms.
Sure, and injuries that may even take years to develop.
Years to develop and a lifetime. I have a very, very close friend who did three tours of duty in Vietnam, who was just recently diagnosed with leukemia from the Agent Orange. Well, that's been 35 years ago, maybe even longer than that, that he served in Vietnam, and now this illness is showing up with him.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll continue with AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park.
Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, National Vice President Jay Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. Marilyn, yesterday marked the anniversary of the caregiver law. Tell us a little bit about that.
We have, a year ago, we were very excited that a very important law, both for the benefits of veterans who are catastrophically disabled, rural veterans, women veterans, and also the nurses and other healthcare providers at their bedside. We were very excited about a law that was passed. It was a conglomeration of different pieces of bills that ended up being called the Caregiver Act. And on May 5th, 2010, there was a very big signing celebration, signing ceremony and celebration, because we thought we were going to start to really better address the needs of today's veterans, so many of whom are so catastrophically disabled and need family members to support them. Rural veterans, of which, of course, there are many more of them than there were in previous periods of combat, and women veterans' health care needs, again, today's veterans versus maybe 50 years ago. We had also fought very hard and were very appreciative of the support we got on the Hill for some of the personnel provisions. We didn't get everything we wanted, but some of the things we got were very important, and I'm sad to say a year later that we are still waiting to see the impact of these provisions that we won in the law. Two of the ones that stand out the most are that we talked about previously about mandatory overtime and understaffing. Well, another way, while we still want to be able to bargain over the issue of mandatory overtime and how to properly allocate it so nurses can be safe and patients can be safe, we were able to get a common sense fix in the caregiver law while we, in the meantime, that is a definition of when it is an emergency that allows you to mandate overtime. Nurses can always volunteer for overtime, but when you mandate that a nurse who's already exhausted or has other obligations is forced to work when he or she would prefer not to work extra hours or isn't able, feels able to, a dozen or more states already have rules and laws and regulations in place for a very long time, in fact, to protect people from mandatory overtime in non-emergency situations. And they define what's an emergency, and they have a very common sense definition. Emergency could be a natural disaster, or it could be a very unique medical situation that's a short-term need. So we finally, after, in fact, NVP Nygaard pursued a grievance, but she was blocked by the bargaining rights policy to get that definition by agency change. But when she couldn't, we went back and got it in the law last year. And it defines the non-emergency situations where you should be able to refuse mandatory overtime. Well, what we're seeing is that management continues to, at the VA, they act as if the law was never passed. They are continuing to invoke mandatory overtime and claiming it's an emergency when it's really just a lack of scheduling and good staffing. That is the job of a nurse manager, is to schedule nurses to cover different shifts and to cover the needs of the patients. And when they don't do that adequately, and like was mentioned, there are caps on FTEs, and they don't adequately prepare for their needs, they can't invoke mandatory overtime and claim it's an emergency. And that's one of the things we're fighting for. And there's some other provisions I could mention, too. The second one that bothers us very much is we're talking about workplace morale. Now, one of the things that's very important to nurses, mainly because so many of them have family obligations, both children and parents, and their is the scheduling. I mean, nurses' scheduling has to be reasonable, has to be fair. Many nurses work on a part-time basis in all the healthcare systems around the country, including the VA. Well, the VA has a loophole in the law that part-time nurses never get rights. They're basically employees at will permanently. They can work 20 years at the VA, and they will never have job security and will never have the basic rights of a permanent nurse. In fact, it's so bad under this loophole in the law that if you were a full-time nurse for 25 years at the VA, and then let's say you want to start working part-time because you have a family or you have an aging parent to care for, or whatever, you're going back to school, you lose all your permanent job rights. So we, this was another victory a year ago in the caregiver law that said that if you're a part-time nurse and you work 2 years, you too can gain permanent rights. The VA continues to act as if that law wasn't passed. They are making nurses who convert to part-time from full-time actually sign waivers of their rights. And we're just very frustrated. We've brought this back to the staff on the Hill who helped put this law together, and we're hoping to get some relief that way and have them comply. Those are two of our very big concerns on the personnel side of that bill. And I just want to finally say that we very much share the concern of the veterans community that the VA has been dragging its feet on implementing the very important health care, direct health care benefits I mentioned for veterans. That's also been a very harmful delay on their part.
Marilyn, as someone who works on Capitol Hill quite often representing AFGE members, in your opinion, what's the holdup?
The holdup on I think when the VA, as Ms. Teacock said, the VA will say, I'm going to do something that's fair and makes sense and is productive, it's good for care, it's good for taxpayers. But when it comes to giving up some control and letting people have a voice at work, they just won't do it in the end. They don't. These people are holding on to old policies, and they'll even be willing to defy a public law.
NVP Nygaard, some of these things that we're talking about here seem appropriate to ensure proper care for the patient, but also to ensure the safety of the caregiver. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that is exactly what the intent was. But like Marilyn said, you know, the VA is not moving forward on many things, so then there's really no way for us to force them other than to try to file something nationally, go to Congress.
Jason, if I could jump in here, the part-time nurse legislation was a very, very important piece. At the current time, about 90% of nurses nationwide are women, and we all understand the fact that women have babies. And that's a common occurrence. I mean, it just makes sense. It's very elementary. And it's a lot of mothers, when they have a child, they want to work part-time for that period of time so that they can be more involved taking care of a newborn and things of that nature. That's a standard practice, not just in nursing, but in many other professions. And for the VA to continue, when Congress passes a law, to deny that law exists and to deny nurses who are part-time, we're not saying that they come to work for a few days and then that they have career status. They've got to work 2 years. That's a very long probationary period. It's not just a slam to nurses. It's a slam to women and those type things. And it's a correction that Congress made. And we hope through whatever powers that we have through litigation or going back to Congress, that the VA will be held accountable and treat nurses who work part-time in a fair mannerism.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park about National Nurses Week and some of the issues that are facing nurses throughout the country. J. David, on the piece with part-time nurses, how are they responding to some of these issues of not having rights that they should?
Well, I mean, it's an unfair thing because many of them who were trying to go to part-time, and more times than not, it's a family situation that someone is trying to go part-time, are not going, and it creates a hardship in their life. And it's an unfair thing. Again, as Marilyn said, nurses work for a long time. Maybe they're having a child, and it could be in today's world, many of us care for elderly parents or some emergency in your own family that you need to be a caregiver. So it's just a total unfair thing to not recognize that these people have a career status after they have worked so long for the VA.
J. David, we know one of your top priorities as National Secretary Treasurer is organizing. And the VA last year had a great year in organizing, brought in a lot of new members about a year ago at this time, a big organizing blitz. How has that helped when Marilyn goes to Capitol Hill or you're talking with agency leaders at the VA?
It helps because of the fact that it's one thing that we represent folks, But it's another thing when they're dues-paying members. I always believe you put your money where your mouth is. And the fact that these people are members of AFGE, that they pay dues, that it gives us a much louder voice. And also, it creates an environment where we can communicate with those members, educate those members, share with them how their members of Congress are voting on issues, and show them how, not just through bargaining contracts, but through a legislative process, we can bring about change. So growing the union is growing the middle class of this country and working men and women, and it's an important thing to do.
Is AFGE getting support from third-party groups on these issues?
All of the veterans organizations have been supporting us with the collective bargaining rights of the Title 38 professionals. All of them have been on record. They have testified frequently. Whenever VA says, oh, this would be very destructive to patient care, every one of the veterans organizations have stood up and said very clearly, no, we do not view that it would have any hardship on patient care. It's a rights issue. It's about treating people right and treating people with dignity and respect in the workplace.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next we'll continue with AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park.
Some polls say Americans don't trust government. But listen to our members, the real people who work hard for you every day.
I'm Mike Schnobrick, a correctional officer at the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. Trust me, the terrorists are locked down tight.
My name is Janet Winghart, a Social Security claims rep in Fort Lauderdale. Senior citizens can trust me to get them the right check at the right time.
I'm Michelle Reed, a registered nurse at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. Trust me, I care for our veterans like family.
My name is Everett Kelly. I work for the Anniston Army Depot, Anniston, Alabama. Trust me, our tanks are tough.
I'm John Gage, president of AFGE. You can trust us. We work for you. Brought to you by AFGE and online at afge.org.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. MVP Nygaard, I want to get your sense for some of the responsibilities and issues facing nurses in the Bureau of Prisons and also in the Department of Defense.
Okay, well, the Bureau of Prisons nurses, I mean, that's a whole different ball game there. Those nurses have to deal with prisoners. And if you've ever been to a medical facility within the Bureau of Prisons, it can be kind of a frightening experience. These nurses not only are caregivers and have to take care of the patients, but they also have to be federal police officers. They need to know how to take, you know, use guns, et cetera. So they have kind of like a twofold thing. The biggest issue with the nurses there also is the fact of staffing. They also have a cap on their staffing and the facilities. And the other issue that they have that's huge is the fact that DOD nurses and BOP nurses, Bureau of Prison and Department of Defense nurses, don't get true overtime. They are capped at 10-2. And the interesting thing is that probably if you look at registered nurses nationwide, they are probably the only group of nurses that don't get true overtime. So that also causes problems because they can go down the road to another hospital and get paid better and get true overtime. So the constant in and out, the rotation of staff is an impact, you know, to have to train people. And you, when you're working in a federal prison, you know, you have to feel like you're comfortable with your teammate. And if you're constantly rotating people, it's difficult to do. As far as the Department of Defense nurses, it's pretty much the same. It's a staffing problem. And they have huge responsibility because they're taking care of soldiers who have just come back from the war. So it could be someone with a traumatic brain injury, or it could be at Walter Reed, or it could be someone with psychological problems from post-traumatic stress syndrome. So, again, they also have the same staffing issues as other federal agencies. They're dependent on budget. They're dependent on Congress's whim at the time or who's in Congress. And currently, they're under the same ceiling as the other agencies.
You mentioned not getting true overtime and being capped at 10 and 2. What does that mean?
The nurses are capped at a GS 10-2. So let's just say, and quite honestly, they're not paid as well as some of the other VA nurses. But so if they're a GS 10 nurse, and they, let's say they're a GS 10 and they're step 10, they'd be making probably their overtime is less than what they'd be making hourly, so they'd be paid at a GS 10 step 2 rather than a GS 10-10. There's a cap. They're considered a cap, and that's under the FLSA, Fair Labor Standards Act.
And a lot of these agencies were also concerned about safe patient handling. Marilyn, could you shed some light on that?
Well, they've actually been working on legislation for a number of Congresses, and I think it's going to be reintroduced this year. Basically, in the VA, we were ahead of the game in terms of the rules we use to lift patients safely. A nurse injury is a huge issue, especially since in the VA, and I think in the nursing profession as a whole, we have a nursing profession is aging. And so therefore, these nurses who lift patients unsafely or at risk for major injury, and also the patient can be dropped, and it's very unsafe for the patient. So there's a lot of rules, and there's been legislation that we've worked with other unions on to establish an OSHA standard. Now, in the VA, they have been working on safe patient handling equipment and rules for a long time, and unlike in a lot of other areas of healthcare, VA is the leader, but sometimes they don't actually make sure that all their facilities are in the lead. And so a lot of our facilities don't have the very equipment that the VA has helped develop and don't provide the training to use the equipment, or they may not have enough equipment. So what we see is twofold. We are supportive of legislation being reintroduced and passed to establish clear rules on safe patient handling, and we would also like the VA to once again follow its own rules and regulations that are already in place so that every VA hospital and nurses in every hospital and those patients they care for are protected.
Jason, if you've heard us say frequently today, the VA follow its own rules. The VA as an agency gets to set the rules, as all federal agencies. Why are they setting rules that they are then not willing to follow? That doesn't make sense. When I posed that question to the secretary, he could not give me an answer either. I mean, you're in the power to make the rules, so why don't you make rules that you're willing to follow? And they say, oh, we're willing to follow our rules, but yet they are not. Frequently not with pay, not with patient safety issues, not with part-time nurses, not with mandatory overtime, all of those type things. The VA regularly and reoccurringly breaks its own rules, as I'm sure that a Department of Defense and Bureau of Prisons does the same thing. I'm just not quite as familiar with the work environment with those nurses as I am with the VA. But that it doesn't make sense. And again, an agency sets its rules. It should be accountable to live by those rules.
As a leader within AFGE, how do you respond to this? How do you move forward with these brick walls being put up in front of you or loopholes that you're trying to get closed?
Well, I think you continue introducing legislation. You continue introducing your membership and the American public and working through whatever avenues that we have, such as trying to work with the Obama administration and the appointees that are now in the VA, and getting them up to speed and for them to truly understand the issues. One glimmer of hope that we have had, the secretary has acknowledged in the VA that these 7422 issues, which are the issues that are deemed non-negotiable or that you can't grieve and all, that there was a wide range of abuse of those issues throughout the VA, and that he has pulled that decision-making power solely to himself, which was a step in the right direction, and we do applaud the Secretary for doing that. And I think we have been starting to see a few less decisions coming out of VA that are so detrimental to the workers in the VA. And usually most of those workers are registered nurses just simply by the size of the population and the number of employees.
One of the major concerns in the Veterans Administration is when veterans come home from war and they're getting reacclimated to work life at home, and some that may fall through the cracks, leading to homelessness. How do we combat veterans' homelessness?
No veteran should have to live on the street in a country this great. And right here in D.C., we see it every day. 99% of the time, those veterans are suffering from mental illness who are living on the street, and they need help and care for that. We sort of changed our health care rules many years ago, back during the Reagan administration, where basically mental illness was treated more on an outpatient basis instead of an inpatient basis. While I believe at one time in this country, we were definitely too far of inpatient treatment with mental illness, I believe we are now too far with outpatient treatment of mental illness, that many of these folks need to be hospitalized and taken care of to get them into more of a stable condition. But homelessness for a veteran is totally unacceptable. I believe homelessness in this country is totally unacceptable for anyone in a country this great. And how we as Americans continue to tolerate it is just a totally unacceptable thing to me.
MVP Nygaard, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I do know that the VA has some programs, and working with the community, like in the Minneapolis area, we actually have a huge apartment building that was built with VA funds and also state of Minnesota funds, and those are for our veterans and homeless veterans. And so many of them, what we do is they bring them in there, they find them. We have a nurse that goes out on the street and actually tries to connect with homeless veterans. They bring them into the VA, assess them, and then try to get them into the apartments. And then what we usually do is put them like on a walk program where they would learn skills. So I think the VA is trying to move forward, but of course all of that costs money. And I agree with J. David, no one should be on the streets, and certainly not the men that served and women that served in our armed forces. So I think that we're trying to move forward on things, but I think us as a nation needs to really look at the whole homeless problem.
And Marilyn, do you think that something like a jobs program for homeless veterans would be a step in the right direction?
Absolutely. If you want to stay off the streets, you need housing and you need income. And we already have a jobs program. It's called Working at the VA. The VA has a long tradition of hiring veterans, especially when they come out of voc rehab from their service-connected disabilities. They help make the VA community run a medical center. They do the food. They do the laundry. They do the housekeeping and the groundskeeping. But unfortunately, in the last administration, we really ramped up the contracting out. And whether you're talking about mowing the lawns around a VA cemetery or washing the pajamas of a veteran who's in the hospital, too often they've given this work out to contractors when this is a natural transition and a perfect employment opportunity for a veteran. And I think it's, the Obama administration is pushing insourcing, which means stopping contracting out and bringing appropriate work back in. I can think of nothing more appropriate than having a VA cemetery or a VA hospital staffed by its own veterans.
Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, 8th District National Vice President Jane Nygaard, and Legislative Representative Marilyn Park. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. Call the AFGE Benefits line at 1-888-844-2343 today to see how much you could save. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Attention AFGE members, government and military employees. Looking for a hassle-free way to buy a new computer, electronics, or home appliances? Purchasing Power allows you to get items such as Dell laptops, HP desktops, and Kenmore appliances through easy payroll deduction. There's no upfront cash required, no credit checks, and AFGE members get a 6% discount. Get started today. Log on to shoppurchasingpower.com. That's shoppurchasingpower.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal
CNN Radio, I'm...